Hey, good evening, everyone. John Henry Soto here, along with George Batista. Welcome to Counterparts, where we spotlight conversations with creative minds and inspirational and incredible minds. And today we have Derek Vanderhorst that's going to be on the show. His story is incredible. His music is awesome. We're so excited to have him on the show. So please just hang on tight. Come on back. We're going to have some fun today. All right, we are back. We had a little technical thing, George. I don't know if you noticed that. A couple of the pages there were a little funky, but this is live, man. So what we're going to do, we're going to keep rock and rolling here. I'll correct it while we're having a conversation. Like I said earlier, Derek Vanderhorst is on the show today. We're really excited. And, you know, George, I know sometimes I go a little bit too long at the beginning. And you get upset. You send me texts. But so we're just gonna get started. Why don't we give some love to our sponsor, and then we'll get Derek up here.
Of course. All right. So, as everyone knows, the Counterpart Show is brought to you by Wellness Resources, a family-owned and operated nutritional supplement company providing the highest quality, clinically formulated supplements since 1985. Find out why Wellness Resources supplements are the top choice of health-conscious individuals around the world. Go to myvitaminresource.com. And if you enter the promo code counterparts, you will get free shipping on every order. Okay, so let's, I'm so excited today. Let's talk a little bit about our guest, Mr. Derek Vanderhorst. So Derek is a singer-songwriter, sound designer, and re-recording mixer for film and television, including the Academy Award-winning Academy Award nominated No Country for Old Men. Derek knows firsthand the power of a new lease on life. Being diagnosed with stage 4 head and neck cancer in 2016, he was told he might lose his voice or worse. In that moment, he knew he could no longer put his lifelong passion for music on hold. Now 5 years cancer-free, and after many hours of vocal rehab, Derek has reclaimed his voice as a folk Americana artist and can be heard on his latest album entitled Wildflower. Now with a post-cancer outlook on life and a renewed dedication to music and songwriting, Derek hopes to inspire others to find their voice and relentlessly pursue their passions. And folks, if you want to really see an inspiring story and a story about perseverance, definitely check this gentleman out. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Derek Vanderhorst.
That was quite an intro. Thank you.
Awesome.
Who is this guy?
This is such an honor to have you on. Like, guys, you know, we dive into the lives of our guests sometimes, and we're like, holy cow, you know, we're like, the what's happening with music and the power of music and the challenges that people go through that we don't know. It's so wonderful to have people like you that not only was able to go through what you went through, but also document this journey with this beautiful music that you put together. So thank you so much for being on here. We really appreciate your time.
Yeah. And I appreciate you guys having me on.
Yeah, thank absolutely.
You. Yeah.
So like I mentioned before we went on, George likes to be official. He's like this.
Good.
John, you could always start.
Somebody's got to keep it together.
Somebody's got to, because I'm all over.
Yeah, I'm not.
I'm in Nashville.
Organized. And, you know, I need organization.
That's right.
So, George, I'm going to turn it over to you for our first question for Derek.
Yes. So, you know, again, it's just tremendous honor to have you on the show. I want to kind of get into all aspects of your journey. I like to start at the beginning. I want to know, you know, growing up, your love of music and you know, was there music playing in your house all the time? So what got you into it? And, you know, kind of detail your journey growing up.
So my grandfather from Syria, and he played something called a rabab, which is a string instrument that can be bowed. And so I grew up with him playing the rabab when I saw him. But as far as musically, It was, I grew up in a very religious household, like Southern Baptist. So, but a bunch of very white people like me, so we couldn't sing or do it. The music was terrible. So I was pretty shielded from music until we moved neighborhoods. And about 9 or 10 years old, my neighbor, his mom was into like Blondie and AC/DC and like all these things I'd never heard before. Oh, so man. I used to go over there with the tape cassette and like recorder records. Yeah. And I got a little Walkman saved up and got that. And just mowing lawns and delivering papers or whatever. And then I would just take them into the bathroom and listen to like, you know, like, these records on tape. Mm-hmm. And then I had always kind of played piano.
Okay.
That was a very safe instrument, so I was allowed to do that. So I played piano, and then as a teenager, my best friend Arthur, who I just played with a few days ago, show up in Greeley, Colorado, he started playing guitar, and then he taught me guitar. And so then I kind of fell in love with stringed instruments, from like banjo, mandolin, which I'm not very good at any of them, but I love playing them.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. that was kind mm-hmm. of the start of my music career. And then I went to university and tried to study music, jazz, and wasn't very good at it. So I ended up in the engineering side of it. Mm-hmm. And then when I was 20, I left university and went to San Francisco and started a band. And we had some success. It was the Rosemarys.
Mm-hmm.
Toured with them. And then I left the band a couple of years later, ended up in Los Angeles and pursued music, and then found out film was kind of a better way to make a living than music. As musicians know, it's sometimes tough to make a living touring. I remember like going to our record label, and they'd have bagels out, and I'd just be stuck in my plastic bag with bagels because we'd never have any money to
go
We'd take them on the road with us in our crappy van or whatever. you guys know, I mean, it's like every musician's story, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Wow. So I wanted to ask you, because just go back a little bit again on the song, you know, listening to your lyrics on Wildflower. They're very well crafted. They have a lot of really amazing. I'm sorry, those are my kids.
No, I love when kids come on. That makes it real. That's awesome. Or dogs,
right?
Yeah, either one.
So, I lost my train of thought. Oh yeah. So, what was the first piece of written music or lyric that you remember when you were younger that really was like, oh, like, because I remember when I first heard and understood someone wrote these words and then they played music to them. And, you know, I mean, I was very young and my grandparents always had records in the house. They're all Spanish. But when I realized, oh, somebody wrote this song that this person sang, like Elvis didn't sing, didn't write his song, somebody wrote it. And it was the first time I realized that these are written by someone. Do you remember the first time that you understood lyrics like that and how it impacted you?
I think you said Elvis, and that was the only records we had in the house.
Oh, wow.
So okay. I didn't know he didn't write his music at the time.
Right.
So I assumed he didn't. I used to watch the Elvis movies. They were terrible, but they were great as a kid, right? Like, I just loved watching them.
Yeah.
But I think, like, the Beatles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like,
right.
Eleanor Rigby, tunes like that.
Yeah.
You listen to them, you're like, what is going on?
Yeah.
Like, who thinks of these lyrics?
I know.
So I think that was kind of my first, like, mind blown. But then I was really into like The Cure and REM, you know, bands like that. And then kind of when I was in college, my first year, I was 17, I saw Wings of Desire. Do you guys know that film, Wim Wenders? It's an expressionist film, but Nick Cave was in it.
Okay.
And if you're familiar with Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, I watched it and I was like, what? Like, it was crazy to me, like seeing music like that. Now it's probably played at Safeway over the loudspeakers, but back then it was insane. Like, it just, like, the lyrics were like insane to me. And I remember buying his album and just like reading, opening it up so I could read every lyric as he sang. And then I got into Tom Waits, you know, things that, kind of the singer song, Bob Dylan, Neil Young. So I kind of, I was like new wave, goth, and folk. I know, it's just, I just kind of like music. So it was whatever I was drawn to at the time. But I remember like Nick Cave specifically, R.E.M., listening to their lyrics. Yeah. I mean, eponymous. I didn't even know what that word meant.
Right.
Right. I was like, what does that mean? Are they making things up?
Right.
So, it was, there's so much great music.
I know.
And then I loved like new wave, like Devo was like, when I first heard Devo, I was like, wow.
Yeah.
It was so cool. And go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I mean, just like, you know, New Order, Joy Division, those kind of bands, like everything.
Yeah. I just, we were so fortunate because like our music, I say our because we're usually probably about the same age. I just remember that era just had so many different variety of music that was all good. Like you mentioned Devo.
So good.
Bob Dylan. I mean, those are two sides.
Yeah, totally different.
You know, good stuff, you know, and we were just so fortunate that we were actually, because now we're in this weird situation now with the TikTok music and stuff. And we end up talking a lot about music and, you know, where music is and where music was. And we did a whole show on do you know who Rick Beato is?
No.
So he does an online YouTube. He has a very successful YouTube channel. And he kind of goes through songs and stuff. But he did a whole episode on old music beating new music on streaming platforms. So 70% of all music that's streamed on these platforms is old music. Old music,
old music.
30-year-old, 40-year-old. There's, you know, and the new stuff is just has a very, very short shelf life when it comes to these streaming platforms.
And it's a lot to wade through, too. There's so much mass. It's like a mountain on you. You can't really digest it all.
So it just shows you how great that music was and still is because it's still so relevant to so many artists today. I'm going to let George ask a question.
Just a comment on that is, again, you know, John and I have talked about a lot about it. It's like, you know, my music, again, you know, 70s and 80s is really my sweet spot for the music. And it's funny because you remember where you were. And it's funny, the other day I had sent a message to John because I heard a song that I hadn't heard since I was a kid. And I remember my mother driving me to school and that song being on a lot. And I was like, holy cow, I haven't heard this song in so long. And he's like, yeah, I have that on my playlist.
I have it on my playlist. I know. I was like,
wow. Just listening. What song was this?
It was, what was the song again?
The name of the song. It's one of those songs that if I hear it, it automatically hits.
It sounds like from the 70s. It was sort of like, hello, it's been a while. Not much.
You know, that type of
thing. Like one of those.
Yeah.
You just remember as a kid, you know, you don't necessarily go and buy the album, but you're like, man, that's just so part of our youth, you know.
Right.
Yeah. I heard Never My Love the other day. I think the Association.
Yeah.
Like, oh, man, I haven't heard that in forever. It's such a beautiful song.
It is. It is. Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah.
George, I'm going to let you ask a question.
Yeah. So thanks, John. Appreciate it. What about, you get into, you know, after, I guess within that time, you start getting into the mixing side of things and that type of thing. So did you kind of have a love for that, or was just, you know, and obviously you get into film. So how did all that work out for you?
I think more because I was a total nerd and really into computers.
Okay.
At the era where film was just starting, the audio part of it was just starting to be done on computers.
Okay.
And so there was kind of this and it was older at the time, people over 30, I know it sounds ridiculous, who like were still working on MAG, on film.
Right.
And so I went in, did a couple of shows on film and then on 2-inch, just kind of learning how to edit. And then computers came along, and I was, you know, since I was a little kid, I had the TI-99/4A and a VIC-20 and a Commodore 64. So I was always into computers. Yeah. And then the Macs came along and they had MIDI. Yeah. So I had a really, at that time, a good understanding of of computers, and the digital audio workstations were a pretty natural fit for me. Mm-hmm. So it let me kind of move up quickly at the time into sound editing, which is like, I mean, you guys do film, so you're familiar that like music might be 20, 30, 40 tracks if you have a symphony, and everybody's mic separately, you're probably right. at 40 or 50 tracks with drum, percussion, everything. Mm-hmm. And then film will explode out to 1,000 or 1,500 tracks.
Right.
So it's like music on steroids, where you have to like wrangle all these separate, you've got dialogue, ADR, which is the recorded dialogue after the movie shot.
Right, right.
These things.
Foley sound.
Foley backgrounds, like so, yeah. just air.
Right,
just air, air exactly. track. And then you see the leaves and they're like, okay, now we need leaves. And then there's trees, there's probably birds. And if there's birds, there's... So it's on and on and on with the tracks. And I love puzzles and I love technology and I love film.
Okay.
And I love music. So it was kind of...
perfect storm.
Yeah, it really was. And so when I got into it, I was like, oh man, this is the coolest thing in the world. Like I get to deal with music and sound effects. And I got to record. You know, I got to go record like Mustangs and things at the time, like old 68 Mustangs, Ferraris and all these old cars. And then I got to go onto airplanes, you know, like military helicopters, things like that, and record them. And I was like, oh, this is the, I'm in heaven. So that was kind of my, like, I got sucked into film very quickly.
Yeah.
Because of that. Yeah.
That's so great. I wanted to ask you about Wildflower, because there's this, it almost feels like when you were writing it, there's, because you work with images and music, it almost like there's a lot of imagery in the music itself. So when I was listening to it, I was, you know, I had the images of like the particular song called I Don't Mind, that I really love that track, by the way. That's really
cool. Oh, thank you.
Yeah, that's a really, really cool track. And Wildflower, the title track, is also awesome. But it does have like almost an arc, the whole record. And you remember in the old days where you get a record and it was actually themed and there was an actual, all the songs kind of fit together and you have this amazing arc within your album. Was that, in, you know, can you talk a little bit about that, of how you put that together? And a little bit about your journey, obviously, as well.
Yeah, it's funny because I'd never written lyrics before. I'd always just been a guitar player.
Really?
Sang before. So
that's actually very shocking, actually.
Yeah, I'd never. This was my first go into writing lyrics. And the way it happened is, it sounds like a tangent, but I was diagnosed with head and neck cancer, stage 4. Mm-hmm. So the world is so spread out now, and all our friends and family are kind of everywhere. And going through those treatments was, like pretty devastating and exhausting. I was, you know, in bed. So I started blogging about that. And I think that's kind of where I started. That was my, like, I'd never written. I'd never, like, you know, even like day to day, like my fiance will write every day. And I'd never done anything like that. So that was my first kind of entrance into writing. And when it's something that personal,
right,
and that horrific, like, you can't be anything but honest.
Right. Yes.
I mean, I think I wrote, like, when I was in a punk band when I was like 17, and we had songs like Too Much Sex, Not Enough TV, you know, things like that. Like, we would just write the dumbest lyrics we possibly could. So I'd written maybe songs like that when I was 17.
Right.
But nothing since then.
Yeah, well.
because I was, you know, the Rosemary's and stuff, they're like, those guys were amazing songwriters, amazing lyricists. And then I was in Leaf and a couple other bands where, you know, the singer was, and actually the keyboard player, Glenn, wrote these amazing lyrics. And I was always very intimidated. I was like, man, how do they do that? Because I wrote like some stupid song when I was 17 or whatever. But so getting that honest and that personal, like immediately, I think that's kind of what led to my songs being stories about either what was going on in my youth, like kind of reflecting, or what was going on with the head and neck cancer, and then my life, how it got turned upside down during that. And then COVID hits. So all these things were a perfect storm for songwriting, I think. Or any art, really, right?
So it's interesting because I've heard songwriting is like, you know, and I'm not a songwriter. John has written, you know, many songs, but I have to assume it was like a therapy for you, right? It was just, there was such a power in that, right? Especially from what you were all going through at that point.
It was. And I'll be honest, like I sat down, we all got locked down, especially probably in LA and New York, right? It didn't seem like, I'm in Colorado now, it didn't seem like they even had COVID here. So I don't know what they were doing. We got locked down and we really couldn't go anywhere. We would walk around the block and then go back home. So I was like, okay, I'm going to learn guitar. And I'm going to just try and write a song every day. So I did that for 150 days. And then the songs that are on Wildflower, and most of them were terrible.
That's the process, though.
It's just exercising that muscle, right? Yeah. And then originally, so going through head and neck cancer, it's chemo and radiation. Mm-hmm. And then, is it cool to talk about this?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
So the radiation, when you have head and neck cancer, and mine was here on my tongue, and then it metastasized over into my neck. The way to get rid of it is to burn it out of you.
Right.
So the radiation is basically giving you a third degree sunburn every day for, 2.5-3 months.
Jeez.
So I lost the ability to like swallow, eat, talk. Like I would like be able to whisper a little bit, but with no volume. So my doctor was really worried that I would lose my voice completely. And then after the radiation treatments finished, it took me about 3 or 4 months to be able to like drink soup again. I would like, if there were any particles in it, it would get stuck in my throat. And I could probably speak in like, you know, very fragmented sentences, very short sentences at least. And I decided to take voice lessons to see if I could strengthen the muscles, because you have the three, you know, muscles that control the vocal cords. And so it took me about 6 months or 9 months before I started taking the voice lesson, maybe even a year before I started taking the voice lessons. And I basically did it online, which is a terrible idea when you're trying to heal something.
Right.
Like watching YouTube videos for that. But I learned guitar on YouTube, which was great. But if you're trying to heal something, that was probably a mistake. So I did that once a week, just went onto YouTube to try and do the little exercises. And then maybe a year after that, I found a teacher who specializes in kind of rehabbing the voice. And he had lost his voice and rehabbed it and had a good understanding of that. And then COVID hits after, 6 months of doing this. And when we started, I might be able to sing one line and then I would choke. And I don't have saliva, so that's why I'm drinking water all the time.
Oh, okay.
Gotcha.
Because they burn the, the salivary glands with the radiation.
Wow.
I did the the lessons, and I started writing songs, and then I would send them to my teacher with my buddy Max. And Max is a great singer, great musician. He's a composer in Hollywood as well, doing a lot of films now. And my teacher was like, yeah, but you're going to sing on the album if you do an album. And I was like, nah, well, we'll talk about that. And he kept saying that, and I kept sending him songs with Max singing on. He was like, yeah, but you're going to sing on the album.
Wow.
And like a year and a half after that, this was still during COVID, I went into a studio because, you know, in a studio, you're in a glass box. And then the engineer's in another room. And I recorded the vocals, and I think I did 13 songs, two takes each in one day. So it was that kind of a progression after a couple years with the teacher, like from one line to being able to sing, as long as I want now.
Right. That is amazing.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to like wrap my head around the mindset of pushing yourself through that moment, you know, those first moments, like seeing the mic in front of you, walking into the room, picking up that guitar.
Right. It's like, it's being in class naked, right?
Right. Yeah.
You guys have done this.
Yeah.
Like acting, you know, what you've done and music. You're literally, you, especially the first time.
Yeah.
It is, it's like, I don't know. It's the most like open you can possibly be.
Right.
And it's a really scary experience anyhow.
Right.
And then my voice has changed so much from the radiation. I never sang, but I could always kind of hit high notes now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm starting to work on, getting a little falsetto integrated back with my, you know, with my regular voice.
Okay.
But it's been tough. Tough and long, and it was quite vulnerable for sure, as it is anyhow.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I want to actually talk about the album, because you wouldn't. There's a lot of things that you couldn't tell. You couldn't tell that you weren't a writer, that you haven't written for years and years. I thought you were just a songwriter, and you are a songwriter. And your voice is really great. I love how you communicate these songs, because you can really feel them, you know. And you mentioned Tom Waits earlier, and I was like, yeah, I can feel that energy. I could feel the Dylan influence,
yep.
But at the same time, that message and that arc was really powerful. Can you talk a little bit about some of the songs, like individually, like what they represent?
Sure.
And the first song, Can't Fall in Love with You, which to me was really like, whoa. I was like,
yeah, that was, well, cancer changes things.
Right.
Yeah, right.
I was wow. Okay. Well, he's letting us know, putting it all on the table. I was like, I love it, you know, and that just kind of that. Almost like it was some humor in there, you know, as well.
Yeah.
It was very tongue in cheek, but it was very straightforward as well.
And I like to say it's a cheeky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I loved it. I loved it. So talk a little bit about that.
So when you go through cancer, and everybody's experienced it, right? Like a family or a friend, like it's a horrible experience.
Yeah.
But what is amazing is your friends and family, and like the people would come, like my friends Beth and Rick would come and drive me to treatment. My picture editor I was working with, this guy Troy, would come and walk my dogs every day. Like all these people were my buddy Eric gave me like a box of rocks, like these polished rocks, one to throw out every day of treatment until the rocks were gone. So like there's so many stories like this. So many. But the person who I was closest to couldn't be there in the way that I needed her to be.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a song for her about that.
Wow.
And I wanted it to be cheeky and not mean.
No. I mean, it communicated.
but it is heartfelt also.
It is. Sure. 100%. Yeah. 100%. You know, it's one of those songs also that you can also, when I listen to it quite a few times, and you could also, it could also be talking about yourself on certain things that, like, I was thinking about myself, like a song like this, if I was writing a song like this, I would think about it, something that I was 20 years ago, a mistake that I did, and I'm writing a song to myself, you know, and I kind of looked at it a little bit like that kind of reflection, you know.
Nobody has mentioned that, and that is actually true. Like, it's also that story. Like,
okay, I felt
like that I wasn't there for me in the way that
I needed
to be. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Also, yeah.
Yeah, because that's what I was thinking. I was saying, like, wow, it's either someone who wasn't there for him, or maybe a combination of both things. But it is something that I did feel with that. That was a very, very well done song. I loved it.
Oh, thank you.
George, you want to ask something? Because I'll just
Definitely should, I want to definitely dive into some of the other songs as well. But a quick question I had again regarding that journey. So I think I had seen you talk before. You I want to know about that mindset that you had, where I think you mentioned that an oncologist actually helped shape the way you thought about it. He just basically said it's either this or this, right? And you know, you could either just, you know, succumb to it, or you can actually fight and do it. And you know, and that's that mindset, right? Because I mean, I'm in the health space as well.
Yeah,
I've actually worked with people who've been diagnosed with cancer, and I've had to, you know, not only on the nutrition side, but also you become kind of a counselor a little bit with
for
that
sure.
as well, you know, and you're helping them with that mindset, helping them, hey, you can do this, you know, this is where we can fight through this and that type of thing. Even people in my own family that I've gone through this with. So talk a little bit about just kind of that mindset of saying, you know what, I'm going to do it, and I'm going to get on the other side of it. And, you know, what you were thinking at that point.
Right. So his name's Dr. Glaspie. He's a world renowned oncologist for chemo. Right. He didn't handle the radiation side, but he handled the chemo side. And he was an accidental therapist, because his bedside manner is terrible, but he's like, he's like one of those geniuses where like he just doesn't really know how to communicate in the real world. Right, right, right. So, but he did say something when I walked in. He's like, I was like, so what is my life now? And he goes, well, it's going to go one of two ways. You're going to walk out of here. Well, three ways. You're going to die or live. So, and if you live, you're going to walk out of here and you're going to blame yourself, blame cancer, live in cancer, always be afraid of cancer. You're going to go through depression. Your whole life is going to revolve around cancer. Or you're going to get through this, and you're going to go through hell, because there's really no more painful treatments than what you're about to face. But once you're out of it, and we talk in 2 years, is like, you're going to have changed your life completely. You're going to have like a whole new lease on life. You're going to appreciate every day. You're going to make something much bigger of your life than you ever thought you could. And he's like, I want you to make the choice before you leave the room today.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah.
And he's like, you don't have to tell me, but I want you to make the choice before you leave. And so that really hit, like, I was like, wow, this is going to be really painful. But my feeling was, if I could have the most painful treatments and live, it's much better than having, you know, mild treatments and dying. So, I took that as like, all right, well, it's going to be painful. We're going to get through this. It's going to suck. It's going to be horrible. I don't know that I'll ever be glad that I had cancer or have that conversation with him. But he was right, because we did have that conversation. And life is much better after an experience like that. I literally wake up every day and go, all right, what cool thing can we do today?
That's awesome. Wow.
Yeah. Nice.
That's all. I think about every day. I think, like, I wake up and that's my first thought. Like, all right, I got to do something cool today.
That's
and then here I am.
Yeah. Now you're here with
us. Amazing.
So cool. You know what? The power, I want to talk a little bit about the power of music. It's George and I geek out on these things. As far as like, you know, spirituality and the power of music and how it can change a person physically, sometimes make them feel something that they didn't feel before. That element of it, you know, did you feel that that was part of, I mean, the treatment, obviously, you know, the medical treatment that you need to handle that. How important was that musical side where you were actually sitting there writing? And was that a healing process as well?
Even just playing the guitar and touching it again.
Wow.
I was like, because I always, like we talked, you gave up guitar for a while. You had a family. Things happen in life where you just kind of, you don't have time or you don't make time.
You don't make time.
Music.
Yeah.
So I always had that feeling like, why did I quit? Why did I like, but I never, I mean, the film industry is brutal. Hours wise, you work and work and work, and 7 days in a row is insanely stressful. Like everything about it is exhaustion.
Right.
It's super cool. But, you know, when you have 20 people sitting behind you, it's the only job I can think of where 20 people sit behind you and, like, just yell things at you how to do your job for hours on end, you know, 15 hours. Like, turn that up, turn that down. I can't hear that word. And you have to, like, so you're, like, always on. It's almost a performance.
Wow.
But you're also managing, like, who's the most important person in the room. And so it's all this kind of stressful stuff. And you're at the end of the $100 million process. So if you blow it, like it's a bad thing. So you have a lot of stress on you. So I never like went home and was like, oh, I should do music. Mm. I went home and wanted silence or just to sit or get on a bicycle, go mountain biking or just kind of be a nature, that kind of thing. And I just let music slide, you know, for 20 some years, didn't play the guitar at all. Mm. So it was, I felt like a kid again, picking up the guitar. I felt incredibly youthful. And I was like, oh yeah, this is what life is about. Yeah. It's about music. And I'll bet you had the same experience a little bit. Like, it's kind of a giddy, silly feeling that you're like, oh yeah, the guitar. Like, I don't take it that seriously, but I take it very seriously. You know what I mean?
Right. It's like, it's one of those. It is, for me, it's an extension of who I am, you know, and I sort of like left. I mean, I've known George, we were kids, you know, we started playing as kids, you know, so the fact that it just wasn't part of my life, it was really strange and almost like there was this missing brother that I just couldn't see anymore, you know.
And it's an old friend or brother.
Yeah, it's an old friend. Again. I do remember actually like doing a run, like just a little run, and you know, being like, oh, okay, yeah, I forgot I can do that. And I was at George's house once. I don't know if you remember this, George, but we were in the living room, and I think I picked up the guitar and I started playing. And your wife came out and she was like, "Is that John? Is that John?" and then it hit me. I was like, "Oh yeah, I forgot that I can actually." I can actually play pretty good.
That's amazing.
And you know, slowly, you know, but it was a slow process for me, obviously, you know, I didn't have the journey that you had, you know, but still the music did change and fills a void, you know, and just makes my life better. Right. You know, it just makes my life better. You know, it's like the same thing with my films and my, the music and my kids and going to a nice restaurant and eating a meal and having a laugh and doing this show and meeting all these great people, you know, that's, life is about fulfillment and filling just time and space and connecting with people and other, you know, and that to me, so it's all of it to me is so important, you know, and to really feel that. So I totally.
And art is connection, right?
It is.
Your films or your music, it's a connection.
100%.
And for me, it's a chance to talk about the cancer and like to be supportive of people going through it. Mm-hmm. And I talk to people all the time who are going through head and neck cancer. And it gives me a license. Like before, if somebody told me they had cancer, I'd be like, oh, dude, that sucks. I'm sorry to hear that. Right. Now I can actually have an honest conversation about it.
Right.
And even more honest through music.
Yes.
And art. And it's really a beautiful kind of thing, right?
Yeah. Oh, I love it. Yeah. I mean, it's communication, you know, and music, that's how we communicate. Film, you know, we're artists, and an artist has to create. And that's one of the reasons why we have the show. It's spotlight conversations with creative minds. That's what we want to do. We want to spotlight these amazing individuals. George, did you have I wanted to talk a little bit about the album. And I know that Tracy said you might maybe play a song. I don't know.
It's hard to get me to put the guitar down these days. Oh. Y'all want me to play a song?
Right? No, we would love it. We would be happy
to play a song. Yeah.
Awesome. So yeah. So I want to talk a little bit about the overall arc. And is there one specific song that when you hear it or when you play it, you're like, that really describes exactly this journey?
There's not one. Like, I Don't Mind is more about like being able to connect to people again after COVID and going through that, like isolation that we all went through.
Yeah, that's a great song.
And Hillbilly Princess is about my youth and going to a religious school and being in like black pants and red, white, or blue shirt and American flag tie and like riding public bus all embarrassed and like just a very like heavy presence from that school in my life. And then meeting a girl who like kind of bucked that system, even though she was in it. And like kind of changed my way, like flipped my way of thinking a little bit, you know, all those. So playing like Baby, I love that song.
Yeah.
It's about a good friend who is an actor and went, you know, is very self-destructive. And watching that self-destructive behavior when they could be on top of the world.
Right.
You know, we all kind of defeat ourselves sometimes or sabotage ourselves a little bit.
Yeah.
And it's kind of dealing with that. And I've done it so much in my life. And so it's also about me. At different times I like different songs more.
Right. Yeah. That makes sense too. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. So we're at 40 minutes now that we've been going. So time flies. Would you like to play a song?
Yeah. Do you guys have a request?
I do like even though I know, but you know, Can't Fall in Love with You is
oh, like, yeah.
It's actually a really good song.
Let's do that one.
Okay.
So yeah, this is about like we talked about going through that the breakup, I guess.
Yeah.
If somebody couldn't be there for me. These old shoes were like an old lost friend. Haven't got a thread or stitch to mend. Old same tune, no place like home. Walls are empty and I'm left alone. Never did like the clothes I wear. Never liked the way I come out. Never understood why I held your hand. Never liked the way my chokes they ran. Never really thought that we'd grow old. You closed the door, left me in the cold. Never understood the words I sang. You never really listened anyway. You never really listened anyway. There's one thing that I can't do. Fall in love again with you. Only thing that I can't do. Fall in love again with you. Fall in love again with you. Watching as the crows fly high. I got the freedom on my mind. Girls in the corner smoking cigarettes. I sit a gasping for my breath. When you're gone and it ain't too soon, you took the air out of this room. You took the air out of this room. Never really thought that we'd grow old. You closed the door, left me in the cold. Never understood the words I sing. Never really listened anyway. You never really listened anyway. There's one thing that I can't do. Fall in love again with you. Only fall in love again with you. Fall in love again with you.
Nice.
Wow.
Fall in love. Thank you.
Fantastic. Wow. You know, it's, I mean, he the lyrics is like of someone who's been writing music for 30 years. That's unbelievable.
Yeah, lyrics are very, very good. And I love the whole presentation of everything that you're doing.
Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me ask you, are you working on like putting a band together? Are you going to do some shows? Are you touring?
I just played in California, played a couple of shows, played the
awesome.
My favorite place to play is Hotel Cafe out there. I don't know if you guys have ever been there.
No.
But everybody, like from Billie Eilish back, everybody's played there, like the singer-songwriter. Like, it's kind of like the holy land of, for me, of like singer-songwriters coming up.
Mm, like the troubadour kind of a deal.
Yeah, it's like the troubadour. Yeah, it's that cool. Awesome. To me, yeah. So I got to play there. I played there last week.
Oh, that's awesome.
Nice.
I'm playing a couple shows in Colorado, playing in Montrose on the 29th. And we got a couple more shows. I should know this off the top of my head. but I've been, like, I was playing with the band. The fiddle player is in the Punch Brothers, so he's gone a lot, touring with those guys. And then bass player now is on tour with Bruce Springsteen, so it's I can't beat that up. Like I would
he's busy.
Yeah, he's definitely busy. So I'm playing solo because it's easier for me to just kind of go out. I might bring a fiddle player with me or something. It's become more of like a one-man show a little bit, where I just tell stories, play music. It's become more of that, and I'm super comfortable playing.
Yeah,
just me and a guitar. So I've been really enjoying that part of it, and then I'll put a band together for bigger shows or big events or something. Yeah.
Well, that's what makes it so engaging is the storytelling with the songs and the songs just being so well written and having so much imagery in them, you know, that the show really, you and a guitar, really is sort of like Springsteen and a guitar, you know, is pretty much,
oh wow,
you'd be okay.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's my favorite thing to see artists like in an intimate setting who are telling stories and talking.
I love it
because you see bands and like it sounds like the album and it's powerful and amazing. You're like, wow, yeah, this is super cool. I see why they're famous. But which is amazing also, but then also the intimate like storytelling and like, you know, cause that's what folk music is.
Right.
Right. It's storytelling.
Yeah.
And where you get to like, just hang out with 100 or 200 people or something. And then you get all hang out afterwards. And you tell stories and then, you know, that's, there's something super cool about that.
Yeah, I love that.
Or even five people, whatever it is, whatever the number.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, I saw we had a guy, I was with a record label for a little while, and there was a guy who was a manager, a lawyer, and he told a story about in like 1970, whatever, he was at Asbury Park, and he went in and he saw this guy come up on stage, and there was about five people in the audience, and he did the most incredible show. He played for like an hour and a half, and it was Springsteen, young, five people in the audience. He was sitting at the bar with his girlfriend at the time, which is his wife now. And he played like he was playing at a stadium. He went up there, he was just him and his guitar, and he said, man, this guy's really good, you know.
Yeah, he is.
A few years later, he was like, I saw this guy.
If he works hard,
I think he can go play.
He may get somewhere, yeah.
So all your dates and stuff can be on your website, can be found.
Yeah, so it's DerekBmusic.com, and then you can like my Instagram and all that is on there as well. I'm not and if you sign up, I promise you don't get inundated with anything, because I'm really bad about my social media presence and my online presence.
Okay, well.
Yeah. I need help. So if any young people are out there who want to.
Well, I'm actually not a young person, but I actually work as a social media manager for an organization. So I'm,
we should talk.
I definitely will be there for you. I'll help you with whatever.
And
you
come to Nashville a bit too.
Okay. Oh, sweet.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's some great places here to play. So
East Nashville is kind of the coolest place right now, right?
Yes.
My buddy, do you know Steve Poltz?
I don't.
Okay, he lives out there. He wrote Jewel's first album.
Oh, wow.
By the way, if you want to see an amazing performance by one dude and a guitar, it's incredible. His storytelling is amazing. He's hilarious. But he's on tour. I think he probably plays 300 days a year. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, he's amazing. So I go out and visit him and some other people.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, now I'm here, so you got to come visit.
Oh man, I would love
That'd
to.
Be
yeah.
Awesome.
I love that city.
Absolutely, yeah. Music City. I love it. So we're at 52 minutes. One of the things that we do here is we also ask our guests, you know, having been the last 2 years with what the current, struggles that a lot of people have been through the last 2 years, you understanding struggle. Do you have any words for our audience, like any words of, encouragement, not the, you can do it, you know, but something that they can take with them that will be tangible during these unsettling times and as we come out of the last 2 years?
Well, I'll speak to people my age, because this is a silly thing to try and like become a music star at 50. Like, who does that? But it's the time now where age doesn't matter.
Doesn't.
Nobody cares. Nobody cares what you look like. And it's like chasing your passions and chasing like your art or family or like anything that you've kind of let go of in the past.
Right.
This is a great time, I think, for us to all reconnect to that or family or people we've lost touch with. It seems like an important time to do that. It's All Right, one of the songs on my album. My buddy Arthur from kindergarten was out visiting me, and we had a buddy, Jimmy Height, who was 1 year younger than us. So we met him in first grade. And we were sitting at a table. I was like, oh yeah, let's call him. I still have his mom's number. Let's call. And we found out he had just passed away.
Oh, wow.
And so it's like, I think for me, my lesson to me is like, connect with friends, connect with family, connect with art, connect with all those things that, you know, life kind of lets them slip by a little bit. We think we get too busy. We get too into ourselves or too into whatever, too into our kids or, you know, just our jobs. I think it's important to take time for ourselves and friends. And, you know, that would be my takeaway from the last few years.
Yeah.
Because it is going to be too late someday. We're all lucky. I mean, literally, every day I wake up on this side of the dirt is a special day.
Right. Right.
And we're all good. I mean, how many people are going through depression and like, oof, just crazy, like all this stuff right now.
It's really, really bad. Yeah. I mean,
yeah,
you know, what you said was perfect. I mean, you know, it is right now a time when we can look at, maybe reconnect with that part of us that we lost, either in our own creative side, but also friends and family that maybe we just didn't connect, you know, just haven't seen in a long time. And you think you have time, but, you know, we're going to run out of time. It's just going to happen to everyone, you know.
Nobody, yeah, we're a second away from the end, all of us.
Yeah, you know, and it's like, it's like, why not do that? You know, I tell George, you know, when we're having conversations, I'm saying, what else are we going to do? We're here. Exactly. We're not waiting for life to start.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Yeah, we're waiting to do
something. Yeah. We're here. Let's just make things happen, you know, and help others get there as well.
Right.
Yeah. No, every time I have that, oh, I should call. I'm like, no, I'm going to call. So I just do.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm.
And I'm terrible at texting and email. So I actually pick up the phone. I go old school.
Yeah.
Nice.
You got the rotary?
Yeah, that's right. Hello?
Like, hello?
Yeah, it's what a great thing, right?
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
So, Derek, thank you so much for being on the show. This has been
honor. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, you're awesome, and we'd love to have you back again. We're
anytime.
Yeah, have some play some more songs and talk some more music. We didn't really get into some of the things that we, George and I, like really the music industry and the current. We love to talk to artists about that as well. So maybe you'll come back at some point and we can have that conversation.
I would love to, because I'm super excited. I know everyone's down on the industry right now, but for guys like me, I get to reach the whole world. In our first band, we took cassettes and we would like cut out and then we'd color them in. And then
I know.
42 people would get the cassette. And now,
I mean, this is the most exciting time for artists. I think artists our age, I think, is the most exciting time. Yeah. I mean, I remember, you know, rewinding my cassette with a pen.
Oh, yeah. The pencil.
You don't want to waste your batteries, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Right. Yeah. It's an exciting time.
It is. 100%. I believe that.
And music's going back to a guy with a guitar.
That's right.
Yep.
That's right. People aren't really realizing that music is there's a shift happening. We've talked about that as well with some guests that we've had on, and that'd be a great conversation to have with you in the future as well.
Do that anytime. Yeah.
Perfect. All right.
All right, guys.
Derek Vanderhoof, thank you so much for being on the show.
Yes, thank you. And you're hired as my social media.
Okay. Yes. Yes. I'll accept. 100%.
You don't know what you're in for.
No, I don't, but. You know what? I can't be that bad. It's all good. All right, man. Thank you so much for being on.
Man,
thank
I you, really Derek. Appreciate you guys. What a great interview. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. All right. Take care.
All right. Take care. Bye.
Whoa. Wow. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. You just don't get better than that. I mean,
You know,
it's one of those things where you see something like that and you're like, what's my excuse?
You know, right. I was just going to say that. Because, you know, I'll still, like, every once in a while, I'll turn around and I'm like, oh, I'm going to go play something. And I'm like, and then I'll watch a YouTube video.
Right,
and
right.
An hour goes by and I'm like, man, and I'm not going to do that anymore. You know, I mean, I've learned the lesson today and really, really appreciate Derek sharing his story with us.
Absolutely.
And we're just blessed to be able to do this and to bring you to, you know, bring this to all of you out there. And please follow him. I'm going to flash the website again. This is, check out his music, check out his album, Wildflower, which is really awesome, and follow him on social media. I'm going to teach him how to get on social media so he can actually respond to you guys. But we're going to have a great time. What was I saying? We had a great time, and we're going to have a great time next week.
Absolutely.
Again. So thank you, everybody, for tuning in. 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Next Tuesday, George Batista, John Henry Soto for Counterparts. We'll see you all again. And as always, peace.
Peace.